Coming up on Golf Today, from working nights at the Country Club in Costa Mesa to a winner on the PGA Tour. More on how the long-hitting Jake Knapp's now realized a lifelong dream in Mexico as part of yet another feel-good story this season on the PGA Tour. And it's been golf's version of searching for Bobby Fischer, the return of Anthony Kim. Golf fans have been waiting for more than a decade to see AK inside the ropes. Today, LIV Golf CEO Greg Norman posting the news on social media. Anthony Kim returning to professional golf this week. We're going to have that story. And two-time major champion Brittany Lincecum joining the show. The six-time Solheim Cupper now getting ready to be an assistant captain this year. What's the new role going to be like? Got a jam-packed hour started right now.
Golf Today.
Hey there, welcome inside our Golf Channel worldwide headquarters. You have two guys here on the desk, certainly don't have a case of the Mondays. George Savarikis, Eamon Lynch here with you for the next hour. Feels like a sprint on Golf Today. And Eamon, just looking at what happened last weekend with Jake Knapp getting the win, it's been kind of the storyline this season on the PGA Tour. Expect the unexpected when it comes to who's going to hoist the hardware on Sundays.
And that applies even on a more granular level yesterday as well. You know, we're accustomed to seeing PGA Tour winners deliver brilliant shot after brilliant shot in high drama. Yesterday, to me, was oddly fascinating to watch because it was two guys who clearly didn't have their best going at it down the stretch. And they were hanging on by their fingernails trying to get that PGA Tour victory. And to me, it was really an interesting insight into the actual pressure that goes along with trying to get that victory and everything that comes with it.
I sincerely hope by the end of this hour, people say that was oddly fascinating to watch George Naaman here on Golf Today. Time now for Winning Moments presented by WinGrips. For that, we're going to turn our focus to the winner, PGA Tour rookie Jake Knapp, taking the Mexico Open at Vidanta for his first PGA Tour title in just his ninth start. Now fully exempt on the PGA Tour through the 2026 season. Also earns a spot in all five remaining signature events, plus the Players, Masters, PGA Championship of the Century in 2025. With the win, Knapp joins Matthew Pavon and Nick Dunlap as first-time winners and rookies this season on the PGA Tour.
And it's been a meteoric rise in the official world golf ranking. In May of last year, he was 1,476. That's just one spot ahead of you back then, George. Right now, he's 52nd, and of course, being in the top 50 also is a big goal for these guys on the PGA Tour. That's another way to get into the Masters.
Yeah, and top 60 could get him into the U.S. Open, which is certainly a spot he would like to be heading into this summer. Touching moment took place after Saturday's third round. Knapp spoke about his grandfather, Gordon Bali, who passed away last April, too, at a special pond. And Knapp still texts him after every round. So in honor of his late grandfather, Knapp got a tattoo of his initials on his left arm last summer. Following his win on Sunday, Knapp was once again asked about his grandfather's influence.
Yesterday you shared the significance with your tattoo and the meaning behind it. Was that something you kind of allowed yourself to reflect on last night or even today during the final putt of your grandpa?
Yeah, I had a little kind of conversation with him this morning and you know, just talked about the day and wish he could be here to watch it and experience all of it. And, you know, I know he's one of those guys that if I ever kind of got down on myself or if I ever got nervous or started doing something bad, he's the kind of that would just kind of whack me on the back of the head and be like, come on, get to work. So, yeah, there was definitely a little bit of that today. Just kind of, even though I didn't have my best stuff, just, you know, kind of doing it for him and everybody else who's been a part of my team and my family and everything for so long. You know, 29 years old and first win, there's a lot of people who helped me along my way. So keeping them in the back of my mind and just, you know, no quit, no surrender, and just grind it out.
What do you think his comments would be on capturing your first PGA Tour win?
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. That's his go-to. So I know he'd shoot me a text with that, and he'd probably say cigars on me when I get home.
I got to be cool to see for Knapp's family, of course, and then the memories that he shared with his grandfather. Like I had mentioned earlier in the show, I mean, we've had so many of these first-time winners now on the PGA Tour. Knapp in golf circles had gotten a lot of people's attention because he's one of the longest hitters on the PGA Tour.
There's a lot of Cinderellas trying to squeeze into this coach on the PGA Tour these days. We've certainly had a lot of good feel-good stories. You know, Chris Kirk winning the Century, Grayson Murray, Nick Dunlap, an amateur winning, and now Jake Knapp. And it's an interesting trend in the dynamic that we're hearing day in, day out, George, around the tour these days, which is that the business needs to be built around the biggest stars, that that's what the audience cares about. And that is really the linchpin to what the PGA Tour and professional golf ought to be, is the elite players. Well, those guys haven't shown up for work this year. Hideki Matsuyama is the only superstar who can be said to have registered at all on the PGA Tour so far into the season. Maybe that changes now when we head to the Florida swing. It needs to. But these stories have existed for as long as the PGA Tour has existed, for as long as the game has existed, these kind of feel-good Cinderella stories. It's disappointing the extent to which you see so much of the commentary diminish the value of them because the big-name guys aren't showing up. But they are still tremendous stories to watch.
I think part of the Jake Knapp story, and it seemed like, I mean, you Google Jake Knapp, PGA Tour winner, every article now has the story of him working at the country club in Costa Mesa as a bouncer for 9 months. But when casual golf fans hear the story, and this was 2 years ago, he had played some in the Korn Ferry Tour, then had dropped down to the mini tours, was trying to find a job he could work nights so he could practice on his game and sharpen it during the day. Goes from mini tours 2 years ago, Korn Ferry Tour last year, PGA Tour this season, now a winner. But it kind of humanizes these guys to show. Ben Griffin was a loan officer. Vijay Singh, 1987, barely had any money to get over. Here's the picture. Ben Griffin, of course, who had that amazing rookie season on the PGA Tour. Vijay Singh in 87 was a bouncer. Rich Beam sold car stereos. I mean, guys will have periods of their career who don't always have this direct ascent where they'll find another job to help support the dream, Eamon.
And the reaction to Knapp's background, it makes you think he went directly from working the door at the nightclub and collaring people on the way out to being a PGA Tour winner. I mean, the guy's won multiple times on the PGA Tour of Canada. He played 36 events in that extended COVID-era Korn Ferry Tour season as well. The guy has been a quality player for a long time. He was just a quality player waiting for the right opportunity, and he was able to capitalise on it when it arose. But, you know, we all like these humanising angles out there, but I do think the bouncer angle is a little bit overplayed with Knapp. He's been a quality player for a long time.
For sure. And I think you're playing that hand until he wins the first time on the PGA Tour. And it's like, all right, that was a cute side note to now what seems to be a very promising career on the PGA Tour, because he embodies the modern PGA Tour player with what he can do off the tee and how he can really dismantle a golf course. And to win this quick, and he had had a couple other like top three, top five type finishes. Yeah. I mean, his trajectory now in the 2024 season seems to be massive.
And with $2 million in earnings in the 2024 season, he's not going to be a bouncer anytime soon. We're going to continue this conversation now in our Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in the Ben and Jerry of Golf Channel in Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner, here to add a little bit of Monday morning flavour to us. Rex, I want to start with you on this idea of the feel-good stories that we see year in and year out on the PGA Tour. We see a lot of them this year, but when we keep hearing that the game needs to be built around the top stars and that that's what people want to see, does the PGA Tour have a problem with the product in the sense that those guys aren't showing up for work and it somehow diminishes the guys who are showing up and delivering those stories?
I think so. When you look at the winners so far this year, for you and I and Ryan, I think we're storytellers. So you can appreciate what Chris Kirk did and what Grayson Murray did, and even Wyndham Clark, having played only 54 holes. But I think all of those are fun stories to write. They're fun stories to report. But you're right. There's no doubt there's a lack of star power. There's been just one top 10 player who's won on the PGA Tour. We're 2 full months into the season. That is a problem. And there's plenty of runway ahead for the PGA Tour, as you pointed out. We're getting into the Florida swing, building our way towards major championship season. But when you look at the numbers, just based on pure world rankings, it's absolutely a problem.
I'm not sure I agree, Rex. I think this is exactly what the full field events are designed for on the PGA Tour. They're designed for upward mobility and stories of upward mobility. And we saw exactly that in Mexico, not just with Jake Knapp, but also the runner-up in Sami Välimäki. Now Jake Knapp is into the signature events. He's into the Masters. He's nearing the top 50 in the world ranking. And although that's potentially going to offer. For the first time in forever, it seemed like there was no talk about money or his $1.5 million payday. And so it kind of follows the pattern of Grayson Murray and Nick Dunlap as well, where these have been really good stories that resonate at least with a hardcore golf audience. Now, I think if anything has been lacking, it's been the signature event series. Rex, you were at Pebble. I was at Riviera. The tournaments just don't have that much juice. There's nothing that really differentiates them as being altogether special compared to the rest of the PGA Tour schedule.
And I think last year we were totally spoiled with the signature events and what they delivered when it came to drama, winners, et cetera. We still have a big Florida swing to go with the API and the Players coming up shortly. And one of the big stories that, we've talked in golf circles for years and years. I started Golf Channel in 2013, and even then it was, when's Anthony Kim going to return? Because the last time we saw him on the PGA Tour, any tour, was in 2012. And now we're getting the news today from Greg Norman, and we've been talking about it for a few weeks now, that Anthony Kim is making his return to professional golf this week in Jeddah. Lav, let's start with you on this one. How big a story is this now that it's 12 years after the fact?
Well, I think it's a huge story. It's certainly a huge story this week. I think it remains to be seen if this will still resonate in a couple of months' time. You know, there's obviously intense curiosity based on how he's going to play. It's certainly an interesting landing spot in Jeddah, where with the time difference, there's probably going to be not just very few fans on site, but also probably very few fans who are actually watching the competition. You know, from a PIF perspective or a LIV perspective, you can certainly say that you're trotting out Bigfoot for all of these well-pocketed folks with the PIF and say, look, this is a huge get that we've gotten for our organization. Although, you know, it's very interesting, George, because it's been, I think, sort of disingenuous to say that this is a knock on LIV as kind of an exhibition, where if you're bringing Anthony Kim back, it just kind of shows that this is not a real serious tour. If this was the PGA Tour, and tournament directors would be bending over backwards to give Anthony Kim a sponsor exemption. And so the bigger point here is that there is such a short window for this to succeed, where if he's getting three events on the LIV schedule, has been reported by at least Sports Illustrated. I mean, that's the attention span that we have now as golf fans and as sports fans. And if Anthony Kim does nothing to dazzle us or to show glimmers of what he had when he was in his early 20s and then he eventually left at 26, we're just going to move on to something else. That's just the nature of being a sports fan these days. So I think that's what I'm most curious about, how he plays this week and if he can kind of summon any greatness over the next month or two as well.
There's two paragraphs to this story, and I find it interesting. One is the idea of why did he choose LIV Golf over the PGA Tour. I spoke with numerous sources who said he had been in talks with officials from both tours trying to decide where he was going to come back. That's one element, and I think it is interesting to sort of take a deep dive into that. And Ryan brought it up in the podcast this morning that maybe Jeddah is a good landing spot for him because he will be in a bit of a cocoon. It'll be in the middle of the night. There won't be a lot of media attention. I'm more fascinated on the other side of this. I can't think of a comp in any other sport of someone who walked away from the game for 12 years and came back. And forget about if he has success or not. I'm just trying to come up with some sort of comparison of someone who has ever done this, because he has been, Labner called him Bigfoot. I'll help Eamon out, and Nessie from Loch Ness. I mean, you can sit here and call him anything. He's been this urban legend that we've seen grainy pictures of and heard rumors about, but now he's coming back.
Bjorn Borg actually walked away after losing the 1981 US Open final to John McEnroe. He decided to come back 10 years later with a wooden racket and a reputation and not much else. And the results really undervalued to some degree the reputation he'd built before that, because he wasn't clearly the same player. Lav, do you think with this Anthony Kim signing, to me, John Rahm is what they aspire to be. You get one of the absolute best players in the world. Anthony Kim is what they are, which is that it's a stunt. It's a gimmick, and it's a tour too reliant on gimmicks in some kind of desperate traction hunt here, because they're not getting an audience traction. To your point, they're not likely to get one in the middle of the night in Jeddah as well. But does it seem a little bit gimmicky to you?
Well, it certainly seems a little bit gimmicky, but I don't think that discounts that this is a huge get, that they were able to lure him basically out of the abyss to play professional golf. To your point about what they aspire to be and what they currently are, I guess in theory, you would want to be the best of both worlds. You would want to have one of the best players of his generation, certainly one of the best European potential players of all time, while also kind of pandering to the general sports crowd or the casual sports fan, which would be Anthony Kim. The sponsor exemptions on the PGA Tour have been around for this exact reason, to provide entertainment or to provide a reason for folks who maybe aren't that attuned to the top levels of competitive golf, a reason to tune in or a reason to buy tickets. Anthony Kim is going to provide that, assuming that he plays in Miami in a couple weeks' time. I think there'll be a lot more fanfare than there potentially is this week in Saudi Arabia.
Rex, how can this be successful for Anthony Kim? I mean, what's that next chapter?
I think we can't put too many expectations on him. Again, he's been away from the game for 12 years, and by all accounts, he's been practicing. He's been preparing for this, and we all know what he looked like before he walked away, but you just have no idea after 12 years. That is a good example that Eamon gave, but when you think about it in golf terms, I mean, we had this conversation just a few weeks ago about Gary Woodland coming back, about Will Zalatoris. That was a year or even less than a year. You're talking about more than a decade since he's been in this environment. And I agree, this is very much gimmicky, and he probably has a short runway when it comes to this. I wouldn't imagine the attention span is going to last more than three or four events if he goes out and struggles mightily. If he can come out and show any signs of life of what we used to see from Anthony Kim, that's a little bit different conversation. But yeah, he's going to have to do something very, very quickly, and that's probably not fair.
And then what I can think of, it's guys who have taken 10 years off and then try and play the PGA Tour champions. And those guys are never sharp and can never rediscover their game. And we see that long gap from, call it, 40 to 50. Anthony's just unique, where it's the prime of his career from 26 to now 38. Eamon.
Rex, John Rahm did an interview with ESPN over the weekend. I was wondering if anything caught your attention, because there were a few interesting sections. You know, he talked about that he would never have left had he not won the Masters, that Tiger blanked him whenever he texted him to say that he had made a personal decision to leave the PGA Tour, or even how he completely pretended that he wasn't even asked the question about whether or not Liv amounted to sports washing by the Saudi government. Was there anything that really caught your eye on that one?
Well, the two you first pointed out, and I do find it interesting. He had said this before, but I do kind of find it fascinating, the idea that had he not won the Masters, would he have not joined Liv Golf? Because he had won a major championship. He had a bit of time to play in the majors, and that's what anybody who went to Liv is looking at their window of playing in the major championships without getting world ranking points. So that part was interesting to me. It was the stuff about Tiger Woods, though, that I took away, because it kind of speaks to the complexity of not just this relationship, but all the relationships between the players who left to go to Liv and those who remain. And it kind of gives you a glimpse into what we're going to run into in the next weeks and months as we get closer to whatever is going to become of professional golf. Because if there is some sort of agreement between the PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund, it's going to have to include some version of those players coming back. And if those two didn't talk, it shows you that there is a frayed relationship, and there's going to have to be work, and there's going to be a lot of negotiation to try to make that relationship come back together and allow those players to come back. Because without Tiger Woods' blessing, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I didn't think there was anything too revelatory in the ESPN interview, but I couldn't help but think afterward, guys, after the 5 minute or so clip that we saw, like, what happens if the two sides don't come together and that golf is not unified? You know, John Rahm clearly left for Liv harboring no ill will towards anyone on the PGA Tour or really anyone involved with the PGA Tour leadership. He said he still wants to play PGA Tour events. He said he wasn't turning his back on anyone. And so I just can't help but wonder, if the two sides do remain separate and they continue on these parallel paths, you know, how much is John Rahm's reported $300 million contract going to satiate him? Will he be happy just playing 13 individual events on Liv and the team championship as well as the major championships? Or will a player of his competitive stature and his intense desire for competition and wanting to be the best in the world, will he be longing or hungering for something else? I think that's kind of a question that, after watching that clip, that's kind of what stayed with me.
Yeah, or if he can somehow use the current schedule to get his game to that level where he still thinks he can be consistently the best or among the best players in the world going forward. All right, let's plug the pod. Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Guys, as always, a lot of fun having you on the show.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Patty Tavakanikit won a major when she was just 20 years old, but the most emotional victory of her career came yesterday in her home country of Thailand. and show you how she got it done under hometown pressure. And Stacey Lewis has unveiled the backroom team she's relying on to reverse America's losing streak at the Solheim Cup. One of our assistant captains is here. We're going to talk to major winner Brittany Lincecum right after the break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Let's check in on the LPGA Tour, what a win it was for Patty Tabatanakit at the Honda LPGA Thailand as she earned her first title since winning that major back in 2021. Thailand, of course, her home country, was born in Bangkok, went to high school there before playing her college golf at UCLA. So she now has the Honda LPGA Thailand and the Chevron Championship as her two wins on the LPGA Tour. So why is the number two so important? Well, with the win, Tabatanakit becomes the sixth different player from Thailand in tour history to earn at least two victories, joining Pajari and Annarumkarn, Ataya Titakul, Mariah Jutanagarn, Jasmine Sawanapura, and Arya Jutanagarn. See Arya with 12. The rest of those players have two LPGA Tour wins apiece.
And sticking with the women's game, in case you missed it, there was some news last week. U.S. Solheim Cup captain Stacey Lewis selected Morgan Pressel, Angela Stanford, Paula Creamer, and Brittany Lincecum as her assistant captains for the 2024 U.S. team. Creamer and Lincecum will serve as assistants for the first time. The Solheim Cup will be held at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Gainesville, Virginia, September 13 through 15.
Lincecum has a long history of the Solheim Cup, has been part of USA teams in 2007, 9, 11, 13, 15, and 17. Six appearances. Her four-ball partnership with Brittany Lang, they went a perfect 4-0 as a duo. One of the best in Solheim Cup history that we've seen. Lewis and Lincecum were U.S. Solheim Cup teammates in 2011, 13, 15, and 17. And now we have a major champion joining us on the show in Brittany Lincecum. Brittany, six times you've been a player in the Solheim Cup. We get the news last week. You're now going to be an assistant captain. What's this new role going to be like?
That's a great question. I'm going to do whatever needs to be done, you know, whether that's giving advice on the first tee, calming the nerves, helping figure out strategies, or making peanut butter and jellies. I'm not really sure.
Brittany, three of the senior members of the backroom team now for America are mothers. Stacey Lewis, Paula Creamer, and you. Are we going to see the kids at the Solheim Cup this year? Is this an opportunity to point out that it is possible to actually have a career at the elite level of this game and be a parent at the same time?
100%. You know, we definitely want to show our girls kind of what their moms do and just, you know, teach them they can reach for the goals. You know, they don't have to be held back for any reasons. And but definitely all the girls are going to be there and we're super excited. It should be really fun.
Yeah, seeing a nice family photo there. That's great.
Cute.
What a shot. Eamon was touching on it. I mean, some of the names, obviously you had Stacey Lewis as captain, the assistants. I mean, our colleague Morgan Pressel, you, Paula Creamer, Angela Stanford. When you hear those five players, what do they represent to American golf?
Gosh, I mean, that is American golf right there. I mean, all five of us, just the tournaments we've won, the Solheims we've played, it'd be cool to do a stat to see how many total Solheims we've all been in. But just, you know, hopefully we're just going to bring energy to the team that maybe they were lacking before. And we all love America so much and we bleed red, white, and blue. So for this event, for all of us to get together, it's just really cool to see it all coming together. And just to be able to be a part of representing my country, it means the world to me.
America has lost the last three Solheim Cup. So have you had any conversation with Stacey about what you guys think needs to change heading into Virginia later this year to end that streak?
I mean, I suggested playing, but that didn't work. But, you know, I think just, you know, last year was a tie. So, I mean, we're definitely close. We just need to come together and, you know, perform. You know, I think with the new two assistant captains, just kind of tying everything in, and it's only a year removed since the last Solheim Cup. So I think everyone still has it fresh on their mind of, you know, they were kind of rookies before and now they're a little bit more experienced. So I think just all those things together, I definitely think we have a great chance. You know, we just need to go out and play our own game. And all you can do is focus on your match and win your point. And that's very important. And don't look at the leaderboard and don't worry about the other players. Just go out and get your point.
Okay, imagine you got your assistant captain hat on now. Eamon and I are getting ready to play in our first Solheim Cup. Have no idea what the experience is like. You as a veteran, you've been down this road. You know what it's like inside the ropes. What would be the one calming piece of advice that you would share?
I feel like I would try to make it light how Sherry Steinhauer did for me back in the day. You know, my first was overseas, and she said, hey, you might get sick on the first tee. And I really, really felt like I almost got sick just because it's so big. It's something that maybe some haven't experienced before. Now, obviously, being last year, maybe some have. But just go on and play your own game. Obviously, it's different. It's going to be in America. We have all of our fans rooting for us. But just try to remind them that they've been in this situation before, whether it has been, you know, amateur golf, college golf, you know, a couple years on tour now. We've all been in that situation, so it's no different. Just go out and have fun and play your game.
You did mention wanting to play on the team. I think you were only slightly tongue-in-cheek on that one. You're one of the first of your generation, Brittany, to try to actually compete while being a mother of two at the same time. Is it difficult to do that in the sense of you're not able to be as single-minded or for want of a better word, selfish, as you might have been earlier in your career?
Absolutely. You know, I see, you know, Lexi Thompson or Charlie Hall posting stuff on social media, and it's like, man, I would love to go putt for an hour, like ask my husband. He's like, oh, no, you know, I have a busy day. I'm still working, so I can't go putt for that hour. So it's definitely your time management is a little bit different. So when I do get to go out and practice, you know, I definitely have to put in, you know, do it the proper way, you know, and not mess around while I'm out there because I don't have as much time as others. But, you know, it's still super rewarding. You know, I'm going to go out and play this year. You know, whether it goes great, if it's bad, you know, just it is what it is. And I wouldn't change anything, obviously. I mean, being a mama too, having those two girls, it's the coolest thing ever. So to be able to bring them along to a few events and kind of show them what I do, at the end of the day, it's still very cool. But being a competitor, obviously, I'm shooting for the stars and I'm going to try to go for broke. So we'll see.
What are the chances that someday down the road, the girls will bring you along to school as a show and tell as the Solheim Cup captain?
That would be very cool. You know, not so much that topic, but Brittany Lang and Paul and I have talked about how cool would it be to have all of our girls involved in the game of golf and be their caddy or just be, you know, walking on the sidelines like our parents did when we were growing up. I think that would be so cool.
And that's the amazing generational tie-in that you can see that is the gift with the game of golf. Brittany Lincecum, thanks so much for hopping on Golf Today with us. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys.
Coming up, we've got Georgia on the mind. So we're looking ahead to the Augusta National Women's Amateur, this incredible event continuing to mark one of the best weeks on the calendar each and every year. On the other side of the break, we're going to introduce you to a player making her final start this April. Welcome back to Golf Today. Invitations to compete in the 2024 Augusta National Women's Amateur were sent back in January. We have a full field of 72 players confirmed for the championship, which will be held April 3rd through 6th in Augusta. Stanford University senior Sadie Engelman will make her second Augusta National Women's Amateur appearance. She has three top 10 finishes this season, including a win at the East Lake Cup at Atlanta Athletic Club last fall and a T4 in the Pac-12 preview that was in Hawaii earlier this month.
Well, in 2023, Sadie earned second team All-America honors as a junior, competed in the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach, and finished runner-up in the Women's Western Amateur. In 2022, she helped Stanford win the NCAA Division I Women's Golf Championship. Sadie Engelman joins us now from Cordoval Golf Course out in California. Sadie, you've been around a lot of the great events in the game. You've played a U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach. You've won the NCAA team title. Where does the Augusta National Women's Amateur rank for you in terms of the events that you deem important?
Yeah, I mean, I think the annual is one of the most important ones out there. I dreamed of it growing up when I saw Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fossey play the first year, and I was lucky enough to play my freshman year. And the last 2 years, I wasn't invited, didn't play my best golf, and so getting into it this year, I'm just really, really excited. And I think it's something that little girls dream of, and dreams do come true there, and I'm really excited.
Sadie, what unfinished business do you feel you have looking towards your second dance here at the Augusta National Women's Amateur?
I think my game's in a lot better spot than it was my freshman year. I've matured a lot through Stanford and just the game of golf over the last 2 years. So I think I have definitely some vengeance to take on the course Champions Retreat. And I think the main goal is to obviously make the cut this year, but also just have a ton of fun and cherish every moment there.
Last time out, you didn't get to play a competitive round on Augusta National. Hopefully that changes this year. What was your excitement level like just even being at Augusta National last time around?
It's actually unreal. Like, you really cannot prepare yourself for what it's going to feel like when you're out there. No matter, like, if you're practicing for a tournament round the next day or just having the best practice round of your life, it was so special. And just getting to walk over the bridge with my parents and take it all in, the silence, the history that goes around that course, it was truly unreal.
Sadie, you won the East Lake Cup in the fall. You're in the midst of your senior season. You have all these big events coming up these next couple months. What's it like as you look at the final turn of your college career?
It's a little bit, I have a few mixed emotions about it for sure. I think I've been in college for a while now and it's definitely run its course, but I'm going to miss it so much. And the memories that I've made with my team and my coaches and just the experience of going to Stanford has been such an amazing time in my life that it's really, really sad knowing that I'm going to have to graduate in a couple months. But I'm trying not to think about that and just trying to look forward to all the great things that are to come, like hopefully postseason with my team. Obviously, Augusta, it's going to be fun with my other four teammates there as well. So just cherishing those moments and really taking it into my professional debut this after the summer.
If you could talk to 18-year-old you and say, hey, this is going to be the biggest surprise when you get to Stanford, what would that be?
Wow, that's a good question. I would probably say just how much college can grow a player, and not only in the golf aspect, obviously it's important with the swing and everything, but really the mental aspect. I think I've learned so many great things from the people that I've been around, whether it be Rachel Heck, Rose Zhang, my coach Ann Walker. Like, I've learned so many things that I think are going to help me even grow my game farther in the future, and I couldn't have never imagined when I committed to Stanford and even started there that I would be where I am today as a golfer, but more importantly, as a person.
Sadie, you mentioned that over the last couple of years, you hadn't been invited to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You hadn't played your best golf. You clearly are playing better golf now. How much of that draws from having played the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach last year? What did you leave with in terms of an assessment of your own game and what you needed to be at in terms of the level to compete at that level with those players?
I think the confidence was a huge part of my week at the Open. I think it was such a special experience. And, you know, I obviously didn't play my best golf there, but to play with people like Annika Sorenstam and Rose Zhang and the other girls that I played with, it was cool to see that I could actually stack up against them, whether or not I made the cut. I knew that my game was there, and it was really cool to watch what they did so that I could kind of learn going forward what I could do to grow my game like theirs are. And honestly, it was just really cool. I think this is one of the biggest events you can play in professional golf, and I think having that is like a really cool thing.
What constitutes a good week for you when you get to Augusta? What will you leave happy with in terms of results or takeaways?
You know, I try not to have like super specific goals. Obviously, like I said, I would love to make the cut. But I kind of just want to play my game and the game that I know I've been practicing with and the game that I know that I have and I can compete with. I think it's going to be a huge stage to play on. There's going to be nerves. There's going to be missed shots. There's going to be tough golf courses. Like, I understand that going in, but I think kind of coming out knowing that I did everything I could to play my best, whether or not it results in me playing Augusta the last day or not. I think just kind of being happy where how I played, how I competed, and most importantly, like, taking everything I can, because this is one of my last amateur golf events, and it's at a really special place, so you have to cherish moments like those.
I mean, how could you not when you have that to look forward to? And then hopefully in the future, when you're a pro, you're looking forward to cashing checks in the next step. She's Stanford senior Sadie Engelman. Thanks for spending some time and chatting with us.
Thank you all so much.